Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are covering local food from a variety of angles, from restaurants to farming to shopping. First, we'll be talking about the impact of the closing of the highly regarded restaurant Talent, a longtime Bloomington restaurant, with IU professor, local food advocate, and writer Christine Barber. Then we'll talk about a cool new urban farming program with urban agriculture educator Emily Toner of the Marion County Purdue Extension Office. And since the holidays are upon us, we'll get some suggestions for food gifts from local chef Amy Von Eif of A Cut Above Catering. And we'll check in with radio personality Mel McMahon of Indiana Originals. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. The big news on the local food scene this week was disappointing to a lot of restaurant fans. Award-winning Bloomington chef David Talent announced this week that Restaurant Talent would be closing at the end of the year. The chef, who is now heading up catering for Indiana University, has sold Restaurant Talent and will be focusing on his IU position as well as on spending more time with his family. Restaurant Talent, arguably the best restaurant in the state, will be missed by many, many diners, including IU professor Christine Barber, who has covered dining for several local publications, including the Bloomington Herald Times and Bloom Magazine. I talked with her this week about David and Chrissy Talent and the work they have done there at Restaurant Talent.
The very first night they opened, I've just never seen anybody look so panic-stricken in my entire life. I can't remember Chrissy quite as clearly. I know she was there, but Dave, they were in this funky old building, the old Talent building, and it was Restaurant Flora then, and the kitchen was very small, and Dave's a big guy, and he was standing outside the door, and my husband and I left, and we'd had this incredible meal, and Dave was standing there, he was so red in the face, and I thought, oh my God, he's going to fall over, and I said, you know, it was just spectacular, and he always says the same thing, yeah? This is really kind of tentative. Yeah. Yeah. You liked it? Yeah. I was like, oh God, yes, I loved it. I loved it. And he just, you know, Dave is so unassuming. He'd be in really big places right now if he weren't an unassuming guy and if he weren't really a humble guy, and he is. They opened that restaurant. They were going to do lunch. They were going to do dinner. They were going to do a bar, late night bar menu. I mean, they had huge plans, and they did go into lunch at a restaurant. Well, I guess it was at Flora. It was wonderful, you know, because Dave would make a burger, a grass fed burger, but then to kind of give it a little unctuousness, he'd put duck fat in it, and then, you know, he'd made the best fries, still makes the best fries on my birthday. I don't know what I'm going to do. My birthday tradition is to go to Restaurant Talent and have a big bowl of fries, and he makes me béarnaise sauce, and I just have fries and béarnaise sauce.
It was, so they were opening, and you were going to write about them right away, but you waited a bit, right?
Well, what I was doing was, I like the idea, I've done this with a couple of restaurants, I did this with Farm as well, I like haunting the opening of a restaurant. I like watching all the early arrangements. I like seeing the panic. I like looking at all the things that go into it, from total chaos to how they bring it together on the night. I guess it's like watching a staged play go through its rehearsals, but even before that. So when I heard a CIA chef was coming to Indiana, oh boy, I don't know that we had any. I called them up, and I was writing a column for the HT, for the Bloomington Herald Times, and I said, I'd really like to do a story on the backstory of how you're doing this. And I got Chrissy on the phone, Kristen, that I was calling her, and she said, well, let me think about it. Let us talk about it. The upshot was they let me in. And I came in a couple of different points. I watched them, training. I watched them painting. I watched all the you know, the electricians and people running around. Her dad runs Price Electric, so they had really good electricians. The kitchen, really, honest to gosh, it was the size of a postage stamp. I didn't want to write about it right away because I wasn't really writing about the opening night. I wanted to write about how you open a restaurant. Opening night was just a stage in that process. I also wanted a night when I sat in the kitchen and just watched, you know, where I watched Dave expedite and I watched the, you know, I mean, there wasn't a lot of motion because there wasn't a lot of room to move in, but I just wanted to see it. So the intention was always to wait and write about it some, you know, a couple weeks down the line. And they didn't want to have be written about the week they opened and have a, you know, ton of people kind of come in and crash them anyway. So I wrote it. I can't remember exactly, you know, the other funny thing about it was that they went and got married shortly after they opened. And what was really interesting about that time was, I don't know if you think back 12 years, Indianapolis was not a food place 12 years ago. I mean, it was not the place it is now.
Oh, no, there was, our bistro was Arbistro, probably, was Oakley's. It Oakley's? Or was, those were the only elements.
Yeah.
So that was all, that was the main things that were happening. So, you know, he was coming into a wide open field.
It was. And none of those places, well, maybe Regina. Greg was not really going to make a whole lot, wasn't making a big effort to do local. Steve wasn't at all. And Regina was. But Dave was, you know, I mean, gangbusters, you know. And I mean, I think on Facebook, Dave Fisher from Fisher Farms said, you know, the first day I went out and I was trying to sell and I went to 17 places and I got 16 no's and a yes from Dave Talent. You know, Dave said yes to farmers. He was willing to pay the extra money. He was willing to, he wasn't saying, I know a local chef who thought, you know, maybe I should be able to get this stuff cheaper because, you know, and make a deal. And Dave was never going to do that. He knew these people had to make a living. And if they were going to grow what he wanted, he had to pay the prices that they wanted, which is why his food was more expensive, which nobody ever understood. But he believed it and he walked that walk. And I swear the whole food culture of the state is different now. And I don't think Slow Food Bloomington changed it because, I mean, there was a while when Slow Food Bloomington was the active convivium and Slow Food Indianapolis was almost non-existent and it's completely switched. Now there, you know, Indianapolis is way different, but I'm not sure it would have happened in a vacuum. And I think that part of the context of it happening was this incredible, powerful food presence down here that just was Dave.
Now he was known as more of a fine dining restaurant. What was the experience like for you when you were there? Because, you know, after a while, you know, he got rid of the tablecloths and it became a little less of that. What was your experience?
Well, I don't think the food changed as much as, you know, I know what their tablecloth bill was. You know, when you're sending thousands of dollars out to launder your tablecloths, you know, why not put that into something else? And I think that's also something, I mean, you know, in a lot of restaurants I've eaten at, the tablecloths have gone and there's a little bit more of a casual vibe to it. But the food didn't really change. You know, Dave's experimented with, I mean, I shouldn't say experimented, I guess it's sort of an experiment, but he's gone with a bar menu and then not with a bar menu. He's put a comfort food dish on the menu or not a comfort food dish. You know, if Dave could change, I mean, if Dave had his druthers, I mean, let me channel Dave here. I think he's thought about different kinds of restaurants he'd like to open, but you can't go from fine dining restaurant talent and then open a fried chicken joint in, you know, in the same spot. You can't do Southern, you can't go do barbecue. You just can't make that change. You can't suddenly turn it into a charcuterie. I mean, you know, he's talked about other things he'd like to do, but restaurant talent's an obligation, you know, and when you're the fine dining restaurant that everybody wants to go to, the pressure is on all the time. How many stories are there of French chefs? I mean, my favorite restaurant in Paris is a restaurant that was a guy who was chasing the Michelin stars, and he just said the hell with it. And he and his wife bought a little hotel with a little brasserie. It's the hardest reservation to get in Paris because the restaurant's about the size of the old Talent kitchen. I mean, it's just miniature. And if you're not staying in the hotel, you probably don't get in. So we stay in the hotel. Best breakfast, best everything. But he's just gone to making quality comfort food, quality regular food with that's inspired instead of the tablecloths and the foie gras and the caviar, you know, all the things you have to jump through to do the fine dining thing. And fine dining is a trap, you know, and it demands everything of you. It's a young person's game.
What was your experiences there? What was that? What was it like when you went? You probably went more often than most people because, you know, coming from Indianapolis, you know, it's a jaunt or it's a special occasion kind of thing. What was a typical experience there?
Well, I'd say we went weekly, so yeah, probably differently. We have a table we always sit at, but you know, I mean, Dave and I have collaborated on a lot of things, and we're good buddies, and he is, I mean, he's 100% guy. The other night I had just a crappy day, and a friend of mine had cataract surgery, and I had told her I would stop and pick up dinner and take it to her because she wasn't feeling well. And I wasn't feeling well. I mean, the day had just gone down the tubes, and I sent a text to Dave. I said, Dave, are you in the kitchen? I said, I need a heavy dose. I said, you know, I told him everything that happened. He said, ooh, sounds like big batch mac and cheese. And he wasn't in the restaurant, but his guys, you know, I went and I picked up this huge, you know, pan of mac and cheese, and it was fabulous. And, you know, he's a good guy. You know, for me, restaurant talent is like eating, you know, in my best friend's kitchen sometimes, you know, it's just comfortable and normal. It is fine dining, but it's, you know, I can also go there and, I mean, I'll go there and say, I'm just had a really crappy day. And Dave will say, do you need pasta with tomato sauce? And I'll say, yes. And that's what I'll have.
We've been talking with IU professor and local food advocate Christine Barber about the work Chef David Talent has done at Restaurant Talent in Bloomington. Stay with us for more from Christine about the chef and the restaurant here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Local food fans, especially fine dining fans, have no doubt heard of and probably been to Restaurant Talent in Bloomington. In fact, we've talked with Chef David Talent several times here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio. But this past week, the chef announced that he has sold the restaurant, which will be closing at the end of the year and will later reopen under new management. Chef David Talent has been a strong proponent of local food. In fact, he co-founded Slow Food Bloomington with IU professor Christine Barber, who talked with us this week about the impact that David Talent and his wife Chrissy have had on fine dining, farming, and the local food community.
He is the first person I know around here who was actually doing the Alice Waters thing with the, you know, he has a relationship with different farmers, and he'll say, I want, you know, Teresa Bertles, for instance, at Heartland Family Farms. He would say, you know, this is what I want. And she'd say, then I'll grow it for you. And she's been to Terra Madre, the slow food thing, two or three times. She'd grow special stuff for Dave. And he had a venison farmer he worked with. He's not in business anymore, but he, you know, he really cultivated the people that he was working with to get exactly what he wanted. And if they knew they had a market that they could count on, they could grow. One of the things that Dave has had an impact on more broadly is that by being really part of this energizing force behind Slow Food, but we started the Winter Farmers Market down here. And the Winter Farmers Market has changed the way farmers grow things because they can sell them all year round. And so hoop houses and preserved foods, and it's a lot more lax in its rules than the summer market. So we don't have, it's not producer only. If you can sell jam, even if you didn't make the sugar, grow the sugar. And you know, partly just being part of, I mean, he's a catalyst. I mean, just things started happening around him as he was here. And I think they rippled from Bloomington on out and have made a huge impact.
You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, how excited he would get about particular produce. And I have seen that, you know, then he'll talk about, you know, what he looks forward to, you know, in the springtime, you know, talk to him at the tail end of winter, you know, and he's looking forward to all those things for springtime. And I always found that so energizing and engaging.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm doing some work with jewelry right now, and I sometimes catch myself with a really goofy look on my face when I'm talking about a jewel, you know, or a rock that I'm working with. And Dave would, like, be like that about a beat. You know, and be like, oh, this, you know, it's just such a perfect thing. And he'd send out, I remember one time he sent out a dish to my husband that was bratwurst poached in duck fat, I think. Like bratwurst confit or something. I don't know what it was, but my husband was just, I mean, it's like, it's in his memory as this amazing thing. Dave never made it again. Jerry never had it again, but it was this thing that was just, you know, and Dave was just so delighted to have somebody who could send something like that out to who would really love it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Kristen Talent and her impact on the restaurant.
Well, and it's been huge. You know, it's funny because since she's actually, I think burned out on it a little bit before Dave did. So she's now involved in real estate and hasn't been at the restaurant for a while. You know, we're acting like, oh, Dave's done, you know, but Chrissy's done too. You know, Dave and Chrissy were part of this together and it is their baby. Chrissy is a magnificent pastry chef. She has this one dessert that is a, butterscotch semifreddo with phyllo, crisps and then kind of caramelized with this butterscotch semifreddo in between. And it is, I mean, all of her desserts are wonderful, but that one was so damn good. And she once made me a birthday cake and she made that cake that's layers of crepes, you know, just crepe after crepe after crepe. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe somebody did this for me. She had the pastry chef contribution to it, but in some ways what Chrissy's, and of course all the decor and all that was Chrissy, but in some ways the biggest contribution was raising the level of service in Bloomington to a level that Bloomington had never seen before. I'm not sure Indianapolis has seen. I mean, the service at Talent, when Chrissy was there training those guys and they were taking tests every time a new menu came out and she was grilling them and she was firing them. And I mean, she had them really on a, just a really first-rate plane of service, and it was delightful. You know, it was just nice to have that smooth, you know, I mean, occasionally they'd get crammed and they'd be in the weeds, and, you know, I mean, anybody who goes out to eat on graduation night in Bloomington, you know, deserves what they get, or Valentine's Day, or, you know, but, you know, occasionally things would get hung up and not go well, you know, just the kitchen would get slammed, but I mean, really occasionally, like just once in a blue moon, because most of the time it worked like clockwork. Those people knew what they were doing. It was a finely oiled machine, and it was Chrissy. It was all Chrissy. And I mean, I think it was really taxing to have to, it's stressful to have to be that person, you know, to be that heavy hand, you know, that heavy, to play the heavy on that. But, and then half the time she'd do that and she'd be managing and she'd be running service and doing the pastry. And then somebody wouldn't show up in the kitchen. And the next thing you know, she's expediting. And I don't know how it happened that she burned out on that. Frankly, that just, I find that hard to believe.
You know, it's all those challenges of running a restaurant that's your own restaurant, you know, and, you know, it was what they wanted, but then that happens. You know, that happens.
And your name is on it, and it's your reputation, and you can't let up. And I think, frankly, once Dave took the job that he took and once Chrissy wasn't there, I think selling it's the best thing they could do. You sure don't want it to go downhill because you can't manage two jobs and it just kind of becomes something less than it is and people don't remember it. You know, right now we're all talking about how fabulous Restaurant Talent is. You know, maybe in a couple of years, if Dave was really stretched thin and it was, you know, we'd be saying, well, you know, jumped the shark 3 years ago, you know, and you want to go out on a high. And you know what? This is all sounding vaguely,
eulogist. I know. I don't know if there's a word, but I get what you mean.
Eulogistic. And Dave's doing the same stuff at the university right now. You know, he's got good, strong support in the university. He's there because President McRobbie and the head of the, you know, IU Foundation use his catering services a lot. And they wanted to have him more convenient. And he's running a catering business over there that is he's trying to get more local stuff in. He's trying to carry on exactly what he's doing. I mean, and people, you know, on Facebook, everyone's going, oh God, oh God, oh God. Well, have a party and have, you know, have traditions cater it.
Well, now that is true. And he said, you know, when I spoke with him that, you know, maybe he can, you know, have even greater impact, you know, and introduce even more people to the local foods.
I will tell you that I have worked for many, many years trying to get more local food in this university. And I have run into a bureaucratic wall every time I've tried. And it's true that IU consumes enormous amounts of food. And it's true that farmers are unpredictable. And it's true that crops can be, you know, I mean, and but Dave's got a different way through the cracks, you know. And he also knows that you don't have to make everything local. You know, you can call your shot. You can make some decisions and let other things go. And I think he'll be smart that way. And it's a new stage for him to work on, you know. And it's not like he can't ever open a restaurant again either. And if he does open a restaurant, it doesn't have to be Restaurant Talent next time. It can be a, you know, Southern, you know, breakfast place or whatever. I mean,
do you think he might?
I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't make a prediction about Dave Talon. I don't know where he's going to go, but it's going to. I'm planning to hang around and make sure I'm in for whatever it is.
We've been talking with IU professor and local food advocate Christine Barber about her friend and local food colleague David Talon of Restaurant Talent in Bloomington. We'll be talking with the chef in coming weeks about his decision to close his award-winning restaurant and what he'll be focusing on next. Well, we talk a lot here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio about local food. Well, that local food has to come from somewhere, so that leads us to urban farming. Yes, there are urban farms scattered around the city, and next year there'll be another one when the Purdue Extension Farm Incubator Project gets going. The project will provide 4 aspiring farmers with a city plot and the guidance to begin farming. It is a cool project, and Purdue Extension urban agriculture educator Emily Toner explains the Farm Incubator Project, how it came about, how it's going to work, and how to apply.
Purdue Extension is the community programming arm of Purdue University, so there's an office in every county. So we actually have 92 offices around the state and educators in every office who focus on youth programming and health and nutrition and agriculture and community development. And so I'm urban agriculture in Indianapolis, but then in addition to that, we also have specialists on campus who are faculty and researchers who our job in the county office is to connect all of the resources and the information that Purdue University could potentially provide to your community to make sure that that gets there.
And I think people might not realize that Marion County being a big city, you know, the city and county being together, that we have, you know, a county extension office, and you're doing these sorts of ag-related things right here in the middle of the city.
Yeah, we actually have a staff of more than 30 people, and a lot of what we do is nutrition education and outreach, but we have 4-H clubs, we have 2 community development educators that help with strategic planning and leadership development, and then we do horticulture and agriculture right here in the city. So,
and that sort of leads into this project that I think sounds really, really neat. So, a farm incubator project. Now, tell me about that, because I think this seems really cool.
It's a really innovative project within the Purdue Extension system. So we're calling it the Purdue Urban Farm Incubator. And the idea is that it's land-based, so you actually have a piece of land associated with this program that's there to support new urban farmers. So the idea being that they have a farm enterprise, could be for-profit or nonprofit, and they apply to rent a plot. So you have an urban farm plot, and then you get some basic infrastructure, so water and tool storage, and then you also get the educational support from our office, and then you have a peer network right there with you. So supposed to be, you know, an incubator is this warm, fuzzy place that helps people get started with life, and in this case with urban farming projects with a little, you know, easier time.
What sorts of farms do you expect? You know, I guess I'm envisioning, you know, small vegetable farms, but I don't know. I suppose it's kind of open, right?
It's very open. So, I mean, we've had even people say, are we going to be able to buy produce from it from across, you know, neighbors around the neighborhood? And I hope so, but I really don't know, because anybody with a business idea is welcome to apply. You could be wanting to grow for a particular restaurant. You could be selling at farmers markets. Could be partnering with a school. There's all sorts of ideas, and these are spaces for budding urban farmers to try out their idea.
Now, how did you come up with the idea for this, and how does something like this take shape?
Well, although this is a new idea for Purdue Extension, actually there are more than 200 farm incubators across the country. So it's an idea that I found. I came into this position as urban agriculture educator a little over a year and a half ago, and it was new for our office, and so I said, you know, what could the urban agriculture community benefit from? And I actually asked the urban farmers here, and they said, well, we need business planning assistance, we need some more training help. And so looking around the country at how people are providing training to urban farmers, I found this incubator concept, and there's actually the National Incubator Farm Training Initiative, and the other person who's working on this project with me, Mimi Zakum, she's an AmeriCorps Vista hosted at Butler University. She and I went to Durham, North Carolina, and we're in a room with 75 other incubator farm project leaders from around the country, and we got to meet up with them. So it's a really cool idea, and it's a new idea for us, but we're not the very first people doing it.
Now, how do you see it taking shape? What will it look like, and where exactly will it be located?
It's in the northwest area of town, so it's going to be on the corner of 25th Street and Raider Street. It's the size of 7 urban lots, and another partner on the project is Renew Indianapolis, and they helped us find this space where there were multiple contiguous vacant lots. And so there are two abandoned houses on the lot right now, and they're going to be demolished, and then we'll be consolidating this space into one field. So it's actually right across the street from School 42 in the northwest area.
Oh, so that'll be nice. It seems like it would be a good resource for an elementary school.
Yeah, we're hoping it can be as much of an asset for that area as possible. We're going to have one group on the site. So there are 4 plots up for rent, and you can apply now to be on those plots, but then there's a 5th plot that will be managed by a local nonprofit, Groundwork Indy, and it's a group of teens, and the leaders at Groundwork Indy will be there doing youth programming and growing food that'll be, you know, easily accessible for the neighborhood. So we are going to have an information session for anybody that wants to learn more before they apply or just thinks it's a crazy interesting project and wants to come hear about what we're up to. It's going to be on Tuesday, December 15th at 5:30 p.m. at the Kepper Institute, which is at 3549 Boulevard Place.
So if anybody has questions about the incubator program or trying to decide if maybe it's a good fit for them, they can come here and ask questions.
Yeah, we would love to see anybody, even if it just sparks an idea, I wonder if that's for me, come on by and we'd love to talk to you.
So now if people want to apply for the incubator program, when is the deadline and how do they do it?
The application is open now and the deadline for applying is January 1st. So you have a few weeks to get it in, and it's an online application that you can find by going to the Purdue Extension Marion County website.
Now, where do you see this project going? Do you see it growing, getting bigger, or is it of a short duration? How is it going to work?
It's meant to be a multi-year project, and we're hoping that we can recruit farmers this year that will actually want to come back next year. You know, we could support people through the first few years of their learning curve as an incubator farmer. But then also we want to include people in that area and elsewhere who are farming in their backyards or have their own urban farm project. And we want to have actually just a network of support for urban farmers in Indianapolis. So we don't have the application period open yet for that opportunity, but early next year we're going to open up and say, okay, we've established we have these 4 farm incubators, or I should say 4 farmers who are on the incubator project. And then we would also like to be inclusive to people that may not be farming on site, but are going through the same learning curve, and we want to help them plug into the resources too.
Now, you've also had a planning course for people who want to do something like this. Is that going to be something that continues too?
Yeah, I think it was highly attended this year. We had an urban farm and local food business planning course, and we set the maximum participation at 30 people, and I let in 36 people because I felt bad turning anyone away. So it was a multi-week course that walked people through business and marketing concepts, and with the goal of being to come out with a business plan for your urban farmer local food business idea. So that was a really cool resource. I think just from the response we had, it's something that's needed, and so I plan to continue it annually.
Now, what sort of ideas do people have? You know, you wonder, you think urban farming, and for some people, I think that, you know, it's kind of a surprise that there are urban farms, but what kind of variety is there out there? What kind of ideas did you see?
Well, we had some. When I think of an urban farm, I think of, you know, about an acre or less of a lot of different types of vegetables and fruits. Call that diversified farming. And you can produce a lot on just an acre or less. We have some people in Indianapolis who make their whole living off of farming an urban acre. So there's a lot of potential for production, even in small spaces. But this course attracted people like that who want to do really intensive fruit and vegetable production, all the way over to someone who already has their own pastry business but wants to grow it and make it more of a full-time thing for themselves. We had someone who designs chicken coops for people that wants to build out her business. We had an herbalist, just all, a really cool variety of people that all want to source locally, either growing or buying locally local products, and then sort of building out the local food economy in many different ways.
And I get the idea that that's a very important part of what you do, is building the local food economy.
Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of people that are part of the urban agriculture community, from community gardens to backyard gardens, and I'm really trying to focus on people that are integrating more with the food economy, whether they're going to sell or just trying to bolster the supply of local food somehow.
We've been talking with Purdue Extension Marion County Urban Agriculture Educator Emily Toner about the Farm Incubator Project. For more information or to apply for the project, go to extension.purdue.edu. We are getting closer and closer to Christmas, and I have to confess, I am a last-minute shopper. So I know that when you're finally headed out to get through that gift list, it helps to have some ideas. So I was happy to talk with local chef Amy Von Eif of A Cut Above Catering recently about her ideas for a few food-related gifts. So if you've got a few foodies on your list, or maybe you just want to tuck away a little something special for yourself, Chef Amy has some great suggestions, and she took a little time out of a busy week of cooking to share those ideas.
This is the time of year where like all my friends on Facebook and or my family friends want to know what are the hot items this year. And I just kind of take you know, things that I've seen people get interested on Facebook. And then, you know, personally, my friends, a lot of them did gardens for the first year this past summer, although it wasn't the best with July. But it's a good starting point. And then so they've canned. And so fermenting for me was really good. And then I kind of introduced them to that. I also introduced them to, like, kimchi and different kind of things. You know, get them outside that box. So a fermenting kit set, like a starter point, was a really good present, I thought, for a foodie this year.
Oh, that's great. So it's actually like a fermenting kit in a box?
Yes. So basically you stick it onto a mason jar, and there's a tube that cuts down on the mold, and then you also are not smelling the smells that's fermenting. And then once it's done, you can stick it in the refrigerator, and it should stay good for a very long time. So,
oh my goodness. So it's called Farm Curious.
Yes.
Fermenting set. Now tell me where you found that.
I did find that on Amazon.com, and it retails for about $25.
Okay, well, yeah. That's a fun thing for, yes, somebody who wants to start experimenting.
Yes. The next thing that I like, because I feel like my hands smell like garlic and onion from Thanksgiving to the holidays.
They probably do. They probably kind of all the time.
All the time, but more so than that. So I like to use soaps that take out that smell. So Heart soaps, and there's some heartfelt soaps. They're local here in Greenwood, and they also kind of infuse coffee and beer into it. So foodies are real excited about that because beer is huge in Indiana right now. So this also takes away the smell. So I really like that.
It does smell good. It does smell good, right?
Too, and it's local. So I like that part about it. And those retail for about $8 a bar.
Okay. And where did you find those?
These are also at Rusted Window, which is, like a little boutique in Carmel. So one of my favorite boutiques. The next thing, speaking of Rusted Window, too, we also have plates from there. These are kind of fun, too, because the plates say pick your own, eat local, farm fresh, homegrown, and so you get to kind of show off that you've done those things and without, like, you know, bragging about it. It says it on the plate, so.
I like those. Those would be nice to use, or they would be nice for decor, too.
Yes, absolutely, especially, like, in the kitchen when, you know, you are becoming that foodie, and so you want to have that around you and make sure you know what you're doing.
So those are fun. And how much are those?
Those retail for about $18 for the set. So it does come in a set of four. The next item I like is a connected kitchen scale. It's a drop scale. So it is all wireless, and you download an app to your smartphone or your iPad, and you're able to control the weight for your baking, all your baking needs. You can convert recipes. You can decrease or increase the portion amounts very quickly. It tells you step by step of what you need to do. And since I'm a culinary chef, baking is not my thing because I'm like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and you obviously cannot do that in baking. So this is really helpful for me personally. And then two, because I'm running around in the kitchen doing other things, if it's connected to the iPad, it says, please go to the oven and grab whatever is out of there.
Oh, that's great. So you download this app, and I'm looking at it right here, and it looks very handy.
And it's small, so right? It's not going to take a lot of counter space. It does retail for $100, so this may not be the gift that you did give, for just family friends, but
maybe
important.
Maybe this is your gift. This is what you buy for yourself.
Maybe. I hope my husband is listening.
Okay, so what else do we have?
Okay, so then also we can do custom gift baskets. And I like this because a lot of my friends have moved out of state, and you can really customize this to do all the Indiana local flavors. You've got best chocolate, you have smoking goose popcorn, 240 sweet. Oh, I mean, all of those things. I love all of these items and those companies. So why not just wrap it up in a basket all in one?
And consumable gifts are kind of a nice thing. It's not like it's another sweater.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, it reminds you of where you ate it for the first time, too. And so it just kind of makes it, your home away from home kind of thing. So I like that. Food is comfort, and you want to add that to that.
It is, especially, if it's a taste of back home.
Yes.
So that's nice.
Yes. And then the next item that I have, I have a mason jar that I just put a simple bow on. I made the tomato jam, and so I feel like a lot of love went into this gift. And the recipe I will have online here today, so we can show everyone how to make the tomato jam. It's very simple, and this also will keep in your refrigerator for a month too. So it's not something that if you worry about gifting it to them, that'll go bad quickly.
Handmade, homemade presents are always nice.
Homemade is fun because it's come from the love. It's the love of it. So,
and I'm guessing you could probably make several of those at a time.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. That's a great idea. So, yeah, you can make it all at once and just pass them out to everybody. And everyone will love it because that will be something different that no one will be gifting. So, next item I have is a wok. Now, you can't see this, but it's all hand pounded. So the heat transfers really well in a wok. Just a normal wok alone. So the hand pounded, hammered is also going to transfer the heat very well. I love this. It's a beautiful piece of kitchen equipment. You can even hang this up like you know, drill a hole in and hang it up. It's definitely a conversation piece, especially when you're having guests over. You pull this baby out, everyone will be wowed about it.
Absolutely. It's beautiful, beautiful, and incredibly useful. So that'd be kind of a nice present if someone's trying to think of yes. something a little unusual.
Yeah, unusual and different. Or, you know, someone's like, I've always wanted to learn how to make Chinese food. That would be a great gift for them. The next is a tagine. This is a kind of like a clay pot. You can do stews in it. The idea is that the heat just kind of gets absorbed throughout the dish. It sits on your stove, and you can do it for several hours, and it makes the chicken moist, and all the moisture comes to the bottom and works its way up. So everything is cooked very evenly.
For all those beautiful Moroccan recipes.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's not a crock pot, so everyone will ask you what it is and how great that is. And the next little gift that I like.
Oh, now this is great.
This is great. I wish you could see it. This is a sriracha keychain. So
I mean, really, it's a tiny bottle of sriracha.
I bought this at World Market. It retails for probably about, you know, $4 or something like that. But it's a great stocking stuffer for those guys that feel like they have to have hot sauce with them at all times. It's kind of like a little gag gift. Although I know that they'll use it for
they,
real.
They really will. People will really use that. That's
they
exactly
will. They
right.
may not admit it, but they will. And then my last item I have, or my second to last item that I have, is a instant read thermometer. It's a little bit bigger, or a lot bigger, than the regular thermometer, but it's instant read, so that you don't have to stand there and wait for it to, you know, figure out what temperature the protein is. It also is a magnet, so it sticks on your refrigerator.
Now that I think is very useful, so no one has to scramble to where is that thermometer.
Exactly. I mean, more time is spent in the kitchen trying to look for the gadgets than if you would have just done it in the first place, like with just like your hand. So this is great. It also beeps when it's done, and it's super handy. This retails for $50. So again, this is going to be a really, really great gift for that foodie. And my last and final gift, which obviously is most important, is our gift certificates to Cut Above Catering. You can come and have an experience with our instructional kitchen, like I was telling you before, or for the Final Cut Challenge. Or if you know someone that just entertains a lot, but waits kind of maybe to the last minute, we do have Express Catering here as well, where you can call ahead and pick up something for 6 to 8 people.
We've been talking food-related Christmas gifts with Chef Amy Von Eif of A Cut Above Catering. You can watch Amy every other week on Indie Style on WISH-TV, or check out A Cut Above Catering on Facebook or at acutabovecatering.com. We have got a real focus on local going today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, maybe even more so than usual. And we're talking with a real live local proponent today, too. Media personality Mel McMahon tells us about her business, Indiana Originals, and explains how she came up with the idea and what the Indiana Originals designation is all about.
So Indiana Originals came out of our own frustration, if you will, of trying to identify what's really local. You know, a lot of companies, they're really smart. They give their places a local feel. They'll put historic pictures of downtown next to their booth, or they'll have, you know, the history of some monument framed on the wall. So you think you're in a local business.
Right, one with a history or something like that.
Exactly. And then you read a little boilerplate on their menu and you're like, oh, this is their 67th location and they're based out of Missouri, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's such a disappointment and a letdown when you think you're supporting local, and then you find out it's not.
Right, because you know the whole shop local, buy local, eat local, drink local. You know that it's a thing, and people like that.
Exactly, it's a lifestyle for a lot of people, but it can be really hard. And Indiana Originals tries to simplify that search for local. So we provide an online directory and an app that you can use for free to search for whatever you're looking for. It could be a new restaurant. It could be a veterinarian clinic. It could be somebody to do your taxes. The idea is that if you want to lead a local lifestyle, you need to be able to find local easily and identify it easily. So Indiana Originals does the hard part for you.
Well, no, that's nice. So, you know, so that you can see like which of your favorite restaurants are on there, for example, you know, since, you know, I'm kind of food focused here. But I would imagine markets and, you know, supermarkets, grocery stores, all sorts of, and food related products and food artisans, I would imagine, you know, they could all find a home kind of on there.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and it's more than just a label. You know, we do a lot of work for our members as well. So there's really two sides to Indiana Originals. There's the B2B side, where we introduce our members to each other to try to help them use each other's products and services, you know, keep as much money here in Indiana as we can and help the quality of life of everyone that's here. And then the C2B side, where we put these members in front of customers with a local preference through different, it could be TV appearances, it could be our radio show, it could be special events, whatever that might be. So really trying to make those connections for people so they can support local easier.
So it's a connection thing. It's letting people, you know where to go.
Exactly. Actually. It's really a network. You know, anybody can put a website up and throw businesses on there. But what we do is members actually, you know, they put their listings on there and we vet every single one. So our listings don't automatically post. They actually go into a pending file and I go in and I look them up and I do research on them and I make sure that they are really original to Indiana and that they're still headquartered here and they're operated here and that they really have an investment in our community.
So that's it. So it's not just that they have a branch location here, but that they are based in Indiana.
Exactly. Exactly. We have that definition of local, original to Indiana, headquartered in Indiana, still operated in Indiana, because we want businesses to have a reason to stay here too. You know, and if they're getting all this support from their local community because they know that these people, you know, they've embraced them, they've grown up with them, they've helped make them successful, even if they grow to another state and they add more locations to another state, if they have that support here, they might keep their headquarters here in Indiana, but still be able to grow. And we want all of our businesses that are members to grow to whatever level they'd like to be.
Well, now tell me how you came up with this idea and how you tried to grow this.
Well, it came out of a couple of different incidences, if you will, but part of it was just our own frustration of finding local. So my husband and I were walking out of my office downtown on Monument Circle, and we wanted to go somewhere local for dinner. And there was a new restaurant kind of around the corner. And I was like, well, I want to go someplace local. I don't know if that's local. I was like, well, I've never heard the name before. Well, have we never heard the name before because it didn't exist before? Or had we not heard the name because it hadn't been in this market before? And so we just kind of started that conversation. Well, how do you know if something's really local? And then I wanted to go buy curtains one day. And I'm like, where can I go buy curtains that's not Bed Bath & Beyond or Target? Don't get me wrong. I love them both. But if I can support local first, I'm going to try local first. And so that conversation just kind of kept coming. And it's like, okay, there's got to be a way that we can identify local and find it easier. Oh, wait, you want to identify and find local easier too? Oh, and so do you, and so do you, and so do you. Okay, well, let's figure out a way to do this.
So that's where you came in? You just decided to do that?
Yeah, really. I mean, that's really as easy as it was. I'm just like, okay, well, I brainstormed with, I think she was 6 at the time, somewhere between 6 and 8. We brainstormed a name, and with my friend Brian from Naptown Buzz, his daughter, Chloe, we brainstormed a name, came up with Indiana Originals. The domain was available online. I'm like, okay, I think this is a sign. And we just went for it. And it kind of, you know, the name, it's not just a clever name. It tells the story, Indiana Originals. Everything there is original to Indiana.
Well, now talk about a little bit about your background and how you, where you come from and your perspective in this, because you've been in this sort of media business for a long time.
Yeah, and lots of different aspects of media as well. So my background is in broadcasting and in business development. So I started in radio when I was 19, which was a while ago. And one of my favorite parts about radio is getting to not only meet the listeners, but meet the clients. And, you know, there's a lot of endorsements, there's a lot of marketing campaigns, a lot of different media experiences that you create for people and for their businesses. And I really enjoyed working with the business owner and figuring out how to help their business grow. And in another life of my career, I also worked for the Salvation Army for quite a few years, started as a spokesperson for them, became the corporate relations coordinator, then became director of major gifts. And I found myself working with businesses that were in one of two categories. They were either doing really, really well and wanted to find a way to give back to the community, or they weren't doing that well and needed some really good PR. So there I was again, finding myself building campaigns so these businesses could promote themselves. And I just really, truly have a passion for that. And I enjoy being a spokesperson for people. And so I love going out and promoting our Indiana Originals members.
Well, now you've talked about radio, so people might recognize you from your years in radio. So you have to tell me a little bit about that, too.
Yeah, sure. So I would say I've been with Emmis for the longest. Right now I'm on Country 97.1 Hank FM, B105.7, and Indiana Originals has our own segment on 93 WIBC. So they still keep me busy over there. But they're extremely flexible and very supportive of Indiana Originals at the same time. I started at 92.3 WTTS in Bloomington. So that really kind of reinforced my love of local, and they're still near and dear to my heart. And I've worked, radio now when it was on 93.1, now it's on 100.9, I was there as well. I-94, now it's 93.9 The Beat, but when it was I-94, I was there. You know, so I've kind of been, I'm in love with Indianapolis, and I've never wanted to move, which has really been kind of not great for my radio career, but I love this community, and I want my, you know, my son to grow up here, and our family really enjoys Indiana, and I've never had a desire to leave. I've had many opportunities, but I've never taken them because this is home.
We've been talking with media personality Mel McMahon about Indiana Originals and how it helps consumers shop local. For more information, check out IndianaOriginals.com. You've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, IU professor, writer, and local food advocate Christine Barber, Purdue Extension urban agriculture educator Emily Toner, local chef Amy Von Eif of A Cut Above Catering, and radio personality and Indiana Originals founder Mel McMahon. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.
Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.